Hey everybody, it is another Monday. Welcome to InterviewCast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, your host, as you know, because you've downloaded this knowing that I am the person doing the interviews. But thank you for everybody who downloaded last week's episode with Keith Elliott Greenberg, our first episode. It was a ton of fun to do, a lot of good feedback to it, so I appreciate everybody who downloaded it and who let us know they enjoyed it. So I'm pretty pumped about doing these interviews now. Every Monday I'm going to come to you guys couple hours before Raw and just have an interview with somebody who's involved in the world of wrestling or has been involved in the world of wrestling. So we've had a few requests. Somebody had asked for Jim Cornette. We're gonna make that one happen in the next few weeks or months. We're a few hours away from Raw. It's February 4th, 2019. Stephanie McMahon is going to be in a segment with Becky Lynch, which could either be great or terrifying, depending on what the outcome is. So we will see what happens with that. Kurt Angle is going to address his future. Is it going to be a WrestleMania match, or is it going to be just him announcing his retirement? Nobody really knows. I did do a poll earlier today on the Inside the Ropes Facebook community, just to kind of see what people would like to see with Kurt Angle. People like to see one last match, where they want to see their retirement. So we had like 140 people want to see him do one last match with an angle tonight. 20 people want him to retire tonight, and there are two lone people who want to see him continue an authority storyline: Andy Connolly and Killian Brown Kenahan. So they may need medical attention in their local area. Let's keep our fingers crossed for them. But today on the show, I always try and record these as close to the output time as I can, because the worst thing would be to do an interview and then something big happens and you can't reference it. So we recorded this last night, interview with Nick Aldis, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So I think this is a pretty cool interview. It goes about 75 minutes. And I talked to Nick about a variety of things. Nick and I kind of became friends a few years ago, and he came on the Scott Steiner tour and kind of helped me not get murdered by Scott Steiner, which was good. Nick's an interesting guy because he's been in wrestling for a long time. He's been in TNA for years, Impact Wrestling, and now he's, you know, the kind of face of the NWA thing, was involved in that huge match All In with Cody. Nick's a kind of polarizing guy. You know, some people kind of think he comes across as too confident or maybe arrogant. I've never got that vibe from him. He's just very blunt and to the point and no bullshit, and that's kind of what I like about him. So I was kind of curious to get his take now on what's happening. He kind of took a gamble on himself with the NWA stuff, because it very easily could not have worked, but Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana and Nick kind of made it work, and it's continued to kind of find its legs and see where it goes. And you know, if 2018's in to go by, you know, they had that All In thing with Cody, and that was the one match that people were talking about after the show. So we went to All In, and all the stuff, there's behind-the-scenes stories that he's not told before in the interview, and we talk about a variety of things, AEW, WWE, and, I made the decision when we were going to be doing this interview that I'm not going to ask Nick about Mickie James, because it's just really lazy. Like, he's married to a woman who's a superstar in WWE. Like, there's nothing left to ask about that, and they're not involved with each other on screen in any way. So it's really just kind of like, you know, so you're married to something. You know, it's so redundant now. So I don't go down that avenue. So sorry to disappoint any of you who wanted me to go down that road. But yeah, it's 75 minutes. I think it's a really good interview, really strong. If you like it, as always, you know, using hashtag ITR InterviewCast, let us know you enjoyed it. Tag us at @inside_the_ropes. Tag Nick at @RealNickAldis. And, just do that every week that you enjoy an interview that we do. Let us know, let the talent know that you enjoyed them being on, so they know that it was worthwhile spending, you know, 75 minutes talking to us. And also, if there's somebody you want to see on the show or hear on the show, let me know. Let us know. @inside_the_ropes, KennyMC1985. Love to hear feedback, good or bad, because it helps us grow as a show. That sounds so wanky, doesn't it? It helps us grow as a show. Anyway, so that's pretty much it. I'm going to just head over to the interview now with Nick. Also, for those of you who listen to all the other Inside the Ropes podcasts, on Wednesday when we do Inside the Ropes, Sondra and I am going to have my finalised WrestleMania card. WrestleMania card. I have it down. The only reason I'm not doing it is because I don't really want to sit and monologue it, because it just feels like really self-indulgent. So I'm not going to do that. says the man who's just done a 5-minute self-indulgent monologue. So, with that said, it's enough about me. It's now time to talk to the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Nick Aldis. Why did he go to the NWA? How did it come about? How's it grown? All In, Cody, all that kind of stuff. It's here. Here is the NWA Champion, Nick Aldis. And we're back here on Inside the Ropes. It's very weird to talk to someone that you're friends with, but I guess I'll try and be as professional as I can. He is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the gladiator of... He is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Nick Aldis. Nick, how are you?
I'm good, Kenny. Yeah, please be careful about what you use in my introduction. Is that based on one of the Twitter questions I saw? I noticed there was a gladiators question in the... I was just looking at the Twitter questions here.
there were various ones, because it's good to talk to you. It's been a while since we
yeah,
spoke.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How's your dog?
My dog is great. So obviously I called him Hulk.
If you're fortunate enough to not follow Kenny on social media, he got a new dog, and he's become one of those insufferable dog people, kind of like we were when our kid was first born. Like you just assume that everybody wants to... Oh, he's adorable, but you just assume that everybody wants to see every single picture of
them. They do.
Oh, look, he's scratching his ass. Oh, look, he's watching TV.
So do you have a long-term plan? The long-term plan, so obviously I've got Hulk, right? Naturally.
Yeah.
The plan is to then get a chocolate lab called Randy, and then instead of the mega powers, you get the mega paws.
Ah, I see.
Not a mark at all.
You might have heat with Natty Neidhart.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? Anyway, her character fascinates me on television. But anyway, so before we get into all the stuff, because you've had a pretty eventful 2018.
Yeah.
I can't quite believe we're only 1 month into 2019 because so much stuff's happened. But before we talk about that, I saw on social media that you went home for Christmas. So I want to ask you, as a fellow Brit, when you come home to the UK, is there any sort of food or drink that you're like, I can't wait to get back to the UK, get away from... You know, cheese spray America. What are your staples that you have to have when you come back?
Cheese spray. It's fish and chips, mate. It's Americans don't know how to do it. It's funny because almost every bar here, like that, will that any place that has that sort of typical sort of bar menu, like fish and chips will quite often be on the menu, and it's always dreadful. It's always like, you know, bird's eye frozen, you know, bollocks with, like, you know, with French fries, and it's just not... I'm like, that's not fish and chips. Yeah, it's chippy, you know, big bit of crunchy cod, and, you know, proper chips. That's... I mean, and after that, it's pretty much like my mum sort of has a pretty good handle on all the stuff I miss. So normally when I get back, she'll always make a crumble of some sort, you know, like Sunday roast, afternoon tea, you know, with scones and clotted cream and jam and all that.
All the good stuff. Well, cause when I lived in Canada for a year, I don't know what you guys call it in England. Like, do you call it a rolling bacon? Is that a bacon butty or a bacon bap or whatever you call it?
Oh, there's a big debate about it. I think there's different regional... there's debates on what, based on region. I think some people call it a bacon roll, bacon bap, bacon butty. Yeah, I've heard them all. I mean, I call it a bacon roll.
Okay, so we would call it like a rolling bacon or a rolling sausage. So like when I was in Canada, you can't get square sausage, which obviously is up in Scotland. So I was like obsessed with getting back to have some. And then I come back and I've been away for a year and I'm like, you know, dedicated like a morning to just like three of these rolls and sausage and, you know, eat them all. And then that night I went to like Edinburgh to see Colt Cabana's like comedy show and Grado was on it. And then when I was leaving to go and get the train back to Glasgow, Grado was just walking past and he goes, "Kenny, how was your rolling sausage, mate?" And all these people just looked round at me, just the judgment of the... But no shame, I enjoyed it. But anyway,
have we really opened a podcast talking about what foods we miss? I mean, folks, I'd like to apologise. This is the second and last episode of Inside the Ropes. everyone's already tuned out.
You'd be surprised. People love a bit of food chat. Well, actually, let me ask you the one other food question that divides everybody here.
Oh my God, there's more?
There's one more. Hawaiian pizza, pineapple on a pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, come on!
It works.
Not a chance.
Works.
Not a chance.
I love pineapple. I like pineapple pretty much with anything, so it works for me.
I used to be a big Rey Mysterio fan, so I found he was into that. Anyway, a lot of people now, I guess, listen to this might only know you as NWA, Nick Aldis. They might not have seen you in TNA years ago, and it kind of feels like a lifetime ago that you were in TNA, but I wanted to ask a couple of questions about that. Because you were there, a young guy, you're working on national TV in America with guys like Doug Williams and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and then obviously, you know, eventually in 2015 you would leave, but do you look back on your TNA run fondly, and overall, when you think back on it now, what are your memories of it? Like, is it fond?
Absolutely. I mean, the only time I didn't enjoy myself at TNA was ironically, like when I was the world champion, like, because I just, you know, John Gaburk and I just didn't click, like, and, you know, it was just unfortunate circumstances. To use a phrase that I hear Bruce Pritchard use a lot on his show, it was snake bit. So I got a concussion in the match with Jeff where I won the title, in the cage match with Jeff Hardy, and AJ was leaving, and we were supposed to have a match the next day where essentially we would have a real match and I would win, you know, clean. And AJ was, you know, I was more than happy to do it that way, and it was all going to be fine. But I had a really severe concussion. I mean, like, I was confused. I couldn't retain any information. I was kind of, I would sort of repeat myself. I mean, it was a bad concussion. And I needed to recover from it. And like, the decision was made pretty quick. Like, okay, that's not an option. So they ended up doing what they did. And even that, I really was like, I was terrified even doing that, because I knew, you know, cause I was so, you know, still kind of messed up. It's the only one I've ever had. Never had one since, never one before. And I recovered fully from that one. After that, I went home and did all the proper protocol stuff. And you know, because I don't mess around with that stuff. But, you know, it just set the tone then, because then there was just such an anger and negativity from the fans towards it, you know, like towards the company. And I unfortunately sort of became the face of that. Like, I became the face of the sort of this terrible decision. And like, I can't believe they let AJ go and stuff like that. And it just led to, like, I resented the fact that I got sort of put in that position against my will. I sort of went, because my argument was that we were a month away from going to the UK, and what better way to sort of distract, and, you know, turn a new page and start a new chapter in the company. After, you know, you can't afford to keep AJ and AJ is going to move on or whatever, what better way to start a new chapter than to have me win the title in London, like, and have this huge babyface moment, you know? And I said, like I still could have turned heel and joined Dixie after that, because then it would have also been the biggest heel turn, you know? And the fact that they were just so adamant that, like, to get it all done in Orlando and wrap it all up like that. And you know, you know, and the reason we couldn't do that was because, oh, well, Jeff can't go to the UK, you know, and it was just all these sort of really annoying circumstances that just prevented the best thing from happening. And in my mind, I've always been one of those people that I try to think about the business in terms of moments, not in terms of, you know, spots or matches and stuff like that. I try to think of it in, because let's face it, what do you remember? You remember moments. You remember Hogan and Rock face to face. You remember, you know, Hogan slamming Andre, you remember Austin in the beer truck, you know what I mean? Like, you remember, like, you know, the snake biting Savage's arm. Like, you remember these moments. You don't sit there and go, oh my God, remember when they locked up and then he took a headlock and then he hit the ropes and then he tackled and then he dropped down and then he hip tossed and then he kicked him off. You don't remember all that. You know what I mean? You remember moments. And looking at it, I went, we have the one thing that TNA was bad at compared to WWE. You know, more obviously than anything else, was like, they didn't deliver like those moments. And I said, we've got a golden opportunity here to have like a moment. And I think that they resisted it because I think I could be wrong, but there was a part of me that always felt like they resisted it because they didn't like the fact that it wouldn't have been in America. You know what I mean? Like they, like this huge moment that I think that there was a sort of resistance to it because there was always a little bit of like resentment in the office that their biggest crowds and their best crowds and stuff were in the UK. Like I always felt like there was a little bit of a resentment to that. But, you know, outside, but to answer your question, the rest of it, I mean, of course I got paid. I got, you know, I had a guaranteed contract. So I made a living. I was there for 6 years and I've started in the business when I was 17 and this has been my occupation. I've made a living from it since I was 18 years old. And TNA obviously is a significant part of that. And I, you know, what an education. Like I can speak fairly freely on this now, but like in 2010, I had a conversation with the person who was then at that time in talent relations at WWE. And they pretty much unofficially told me like, we are very interested. I decided to stay with TNA at that point because I didn't think I was ready for WWE and I wasn't. But the other reason was at that time, they didn't have the performance center. Had they had the performance center, I would have gone in a heartbeat. But at the time they still only had FCW in Tampa. And I knew half the people that were there. They were my guy. They were my age. I mean, my friends, they were at my level. And I was sitting there going, I've got an opportunity here to work with Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and like I'm sitting under the learning tree of Kevin Nash every week, and you know I still am, and like, and Sting is there, and Mick Foley, and you know all these guys, Scott Steiner, and I got to work with all of them. The Dudleys, like, you know, Bubba was a huge help to me when I first got there, and there was so like I looked at the as education. You know, Terry Taylor said to me once, he's like, you're getting paid to go to college, and I agreed with that, and I sort of went, yep, I'm gonna stay here and work because I know how I am. I learn better through osmosis. So, you know, that it's for better or for worse, you know, it shaped who I am today in the business. And at 32, you know, I'm really just sort of hitting my stride, but you know, you learn from, you have to fail your way to success a lot of the time. And so, you know, that like the one drawback, I was having this conversation with Chris Masters the other day, was like, when you get put on TV, a national TV, when you're that young, it can be sometimes not necessarily the best idea because, you know, the audience can sort of give up on you. But I worked through it. I plowed through it. I remember like around like 2013, they really got to that point where I could feel the audience kind of going, okay, like you've earned it. You know what I mean? Like we're going to stop giving you shit now. Like you're in, like we're behind you. And so it's, you know, that it was all part of the tapestry of my career and my life.
Well, I do. You did bring up Kevin Nash there, who, you know, every time you watch a shoot interview with Kevin Nash, you just want to go for a beer with him.
Oh, he's the best.
But you said that, you know, you sat under the learning tree of Kevin Nash. Is there like a favorite piece of advice that Kevin Nash gave you that you could tell the listeners about, just that you still kind of use to this day?
Oh God, so many. The one thing I would say, Kevin and Scott both said this. They've probably said it publicly, but they said it to me as well, which was about like doing the honors for someone. And if you look back at my, you know, I've been one of those guys throughout my career that has held championships because I lend myself well to that role of being like a champion who holds onto it that, you know, eventually people want to see get beaten. And I understand that. And I like that role, you know, cause it's a good spot. And, Kevin and Scott both told me always, like, if someone's beating me, they're beating me, you know, like they're not, you know, I'm not going to kick out on 3.1, you know, and sort of have some sort of back, you know, my foot was under the rug, you know what I mean? Or like have some sort of out, you know, like, because ultimately, you know, it's about making, if you make a guy, you know, then hopefully that guy remembers it. And, you know, I'm sure if you talked to Cody as an example, you know, there's a guy who, You know, outside of some really unusual stuff happening, like, you know, we'll always have that bond forever because, you know, and he's told me that, you know, personally, he's like, he goes, you know, we shared a moment that so few people in our business ever get to experience. And he's like, you know, you gave that to me. Like, I'll always remember that. And, you know, that's to me is that's the art of doing business. Like, that's what this business is about.
And, you know, I could ask you 100 TNA questions, but I'll move on to kind of more recent stuff. So, because you were in TNA for so long, and then there was a little period where it was like, what are you going to do next? And in 2017, the NWA thing comes up. How did it come about? Like, what was the kind of chain of events that that led to you doing the NWA? And I've got to ask, when you heard or were asked to, were you receptive to it initially, or were you hesitant?
I remember seeing the seeing the news, you know, that Billy had bought the NWA, and because I had really checked out from Impact, like I just. Well, not out of any sort of bitterness or resentment or anything, just from like exhaustion, you know, it was kind of like a breakup, you know, like you just kind of, you know, you're not doing it to prove a point. You're just trying to avoid seeing them all the time. Cause it's painful. You just kind of, you're just ready to move on, and you can't move on if you're constantly looking back, you know? And so I would hear different stuff that was going on. And obviously, like, you know, like when Eddie Edwards won the title, I congratulated him and stuff like that. You know, like if my guys did something, you know, if my buddies were doing something good, but overall I was just not interested in, you know, in what was going on next. Cause I knew that it was only going to get worse. And, but I sort of knew about the Billy stuff with them but didn't know enough really to know the details. I just know that it was very, very contentious. And so when I saw the news that he had bought the NWA, I remember going like, God, like, does he likes pain, you know what I mean? He's sadistic, like, because, you know, it's like he's going straight into another thing. And I didn't really think anything more of it. And then I got a call from Lagana, and he was basically like, he called me in the summer, was just like, just sort of really out of the blue, and was just like, why aren't you in WWE yet? And I just sort of went, I don't know, Dave. But you know, I'm kind of done sort of jumping through hoops for it. And it's like, they know where I am, and you know, it's not worth me, like, you know, stressing myself out over it. It's not fair, you know, and I just got to move on with my life, kind of thing. And he goes, okay, so are you still, like, are you, you know, where are you at, like, as far as the business and stuff? And I said, I'm ready to go. I just want to do stuff that I enjoy doing, and I'm like passionate about. And I said, I want to put my brains to use, like, not just wrestle. I want to have an input. I want to have a say. And he was just like, well, we're starting up this thing. It's like absolutely like grassroots, you know, starting from absolute scratch, and kind of laid out what Billy saw for it, and said, when we talked about who was available and who could essentially kind of carry it for us and do this. And he was like, he said, you know, you were really like one of the only candidates we could think of. And I said, okay. We just sort of discussed our philosophies, and Dave and I had worked together in TNA, and we had, you know, we had good chemistry, from that sort of producer and talent level anyway. So he sort of knew what he had, and I knew what I had with him. And so I wasn't worried about that. It was really more just about, I didn't know Billy really. Like, we had interacted like a little bit, but Billy's he's a very guarded guy. He's very, you know, he's obviously incredibly famous and wealthy, and has been for so long that he's obviously very guarded about people, and especially people in the wrestling business who are all like, hey brother, you know. And so I didn't really have a read on him. And then so me and Dave talked a bit. I got off the phone with Dave, and immediately my phone rang, and it was Billy. And Billy was just like, he's like, I'm sick and tired of watching like all these guys that look like my next door neighbor wrestling and doing like gymnastics routines. He's like, there's a place for that. He's like, I just, why do we only have to see that? And why can't we see big, rugged athletes like competing for a prize that means something? And I was just like, okay. All right, step into my office. You know what I mean? And that was kind of like how the conversation started. And then really like we started up a, well, I basically said, okay, I'm in, I'm on board. Like, but if I'm in, I'm in. I pretty much said, like, if I'm doing this, I want, like, I'm part of the team. Like, I'm not just like, I said, because I'm kind of gambling too, in a sense, because I'm sort of saying like I'm committing to this, so I have to. I said if at least if it doesn't work and I'm a complete failure, like I can't point any fingers and say, well, it wasn't my idea, it was this guy, you know. And I said, well, I think I've earned that right at this point. And they were like, no, absolutely. Like this is one of the other reasons why we want you here, because we want your input on every level. And we started using Slack, which is, I don't know if you know what Slack is. It's an app that's like a, it's a business, yeah, business communication app and stuff. And then within a few days, like we just, that was how we communicated a lot. And really quick, it was right around the time that Mayweather McGregor was happening. And I was so, you know, I just loved all of the, I loved all of the build to that and the, you know, the pageantry and the bravado and everything. And I said, where is this in wrestling? You know, like they said, I've started talking about how, you know, I'm not a boxing aficionado, I'm not an MMA aficionado, but when HBO do 24/7 or Showtime does All Access or UFC does, you know, UFC Countdown or Embedded or whatever, I'm like, I'm fascinated by it. I'm just so into it, and I get so hyped, and I'm like, I want to, you know, now I want to see this conclude. I want to see this confrontation. And it's just to build to one fight, one, you know, and we may not see these guys again for months. And I go, if this is where we're at and we're completely starting from scratch and we're kind of on a shoestring, why can't we do that? Why can't we kind of make the thing, you know, make a show that really makes people give a shit about the match they're about to see rather than just show them a match? Because I was like, we can turn on the TV, I can turn on any device and see loads of great wrestling, in-ring wrestling that doesn't mean anything, you know, the NXT, New Japan, Ring of Honor, all the WWE, you know, all these great independents, you know. I said, I can, and half the time it's the same people, you know, it's the same match. Like, it's really good, but it's kind of like, how many times can you watch it? Like without there being, you know, without a purpose. And I said, that's not what drew me to get into this business. You know, what drew me to get into it was seeing building the anticipation for, you know, The Rock and Steve Austin, or, you know, or before that, like Bret Hart and, you know, Shawn Michaels or whatever. And I go, like, let's take that a step further and really like luxuriate it, you know, really, really take our time and build just one match. And I was like, why can we at least try it, you know what I mean? And they were pretty much like, yeah. Like Dave was like, that's I've always wanted to do something like that. And so between us all sort of hammering out like what we saw for this thing and how the best way it started off really is just the best way for us to sort of get something out there quickly without Billy spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And pretty quickly it was like they, you know, they Billy, the other thing he did, he got rid of all the champions, you know, like there were he bought the NWA from Bruce Starr, and there was all these sort of, you know, member promotions that were all these sort of, you know, tin pot like independents around the South and stuff. And Billy, you know, Billy and Dave, they went to all of them and pretty much kind of said, you know, we're starting from scratch, and it's we're not doing like regional, you know, we're not doing memberships anymore and all that. Like it's just a money grab, like, so, but we're not telling you that we won't ever work with you, you know, if you're good and like, you know, we'll give you an opportunity kind of thing, but we're not doing the membership thing anymore. And all of them pretty much all of them were like salty about it, and so Billy was just like, okay, fine, like I'm starting from scratch. But then they met Tim Storm, and they were just so enamored by this guy because he's such a nice guy, and he really is. Like he's just such a, first of all, he's like a rugged man's man, and he's just got these like steel blue eyes, and he's just this great dude, and he's got this deep Texas voice, and he's just like, he's so unique in that in the business at this point, because he's like, and we just looked at his story, and it was like fascinating, and they kind of called me and said, this might seem strange, but we kind of want to keep him as the world champion and just kind of and start there and make that the story, that like this is where we are, like this this school teacher from Texas who's like, or from Arkansas, who lives in Texas, and he's, you know, no one really knows who he is outside of like a couple of independent promotions, and but he's this great, honest, hardworking guy, and to him, like being the NWA champion really means something, and it's his mountaintop, and like, you know, he knows that this is, you know, and I was just like, I love it. I was like, I said, it's perfect contrast for me, you know, looking like this kid who got all these breaks early on in his career, and, you know, thinks he's just going to walk through this guy. So I love it. And we went with that. And it was so jarring, I think, to people, because they're so used to having all these new promotions that I'm going, we're going to change the business, you know, like, oh, like, get ready, we're going to go on a roller coaster ride, you know, and they say all this nonsense, you know, that's just like so hard to back up. And there's just so, you know, I think they're just so tired of it, they try to use these sort of silly innuendos and stuff to imply that maybe they've got TV coming, you know, and all this kind of thing, which is just, it just doesn't work. I've seen it happen with my own eyes.
What I liked about the Tim Storm thing was, because I remember going in to watch it kind of going, really? Like, yeah. It's going to be... And then I think we'd be remiss to say, well, this was a blockbuster thing, but it was a building block, right? And that was what was so good about it, was that it was part of a... You're watching a story, and even though Tim Storm is never really going to get too far in that story, you told a fun part of it that people don't usually tell.
Right. We wanted to do, like... You can't be better than, yeah. You know, if you're using WWE as the example, right? You can't be better than. You have to be different than. And we didn't just look at WWE. We looked at the whole industry, and we said we have to be different. We have to be different than that. And so we always intended that we were never going to try to blow the doors off on day one and get, you know, and try to attract as many people as possible right from the beginning. Like, we knew that it was going to have to be an organic thing where word started to spread and people started going, hey, have you seen this, you know, this show, this 10 pounds of gold, like it's really cool, and you know, it's really compelling, and like, we always knew that that was the way it was going to have to build, like it was, you know, for it to be sustainable. But even I was surprised genuinely at how quickly, like, you know, because people forget this, but that was like, I think September that we started doing that, and by the time I won the title in December, like it was a headline, you know, and we weren't sure if it was going to be one or whether we were just going to keep plodding on with our stuff, but suddenly it was a headline, and suddenly I had all these interview requests and stuff, and they're like, you're the NWA champion, and you know, and blah blah blah, and you know, we knew pretty quickly that we'd got people's attention. And then the thing where I knew that we were sort of on the right track was when I had probably, at that point, when I won the title the first time, I probably had something like 25 bookings or something thereabouts in my calendar. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them contacted me and within a few days and said, can we make it an NWA title match? Like, we just saw that you won the NWA title. Like, that's so cool. You know, like, what do we have to do to make it a title match? Is that possible? And it was funny because we hadn't even really discussed that yet. We were still deciding how we were going to do that. We were going to, well, are we going to make it special and only do, you know, certain shows where we, you know, make a title defense and build to that one and this and that? Or are we going to do, and I pretty much said, well, all these bookings I've got are all asking for it. And I said, what's more retro NWA cool than the traveling champion routine? I was like, Dave can just follow me around and we can get all this. I said, like, we have a sort of opportunity sort of fell into our lap to where we could sort of do the traveling champion shtick. And again, I hate to destroy the illusion that this was all sort of part of a grand plan, but we did that just sort of fell into our lap. And then people started going, oh, this is so cool. Like, they're doing the traveling champion thing. Like, oh, that's so great. Like, it's so retro. Like, it's so great, you know, to do it in the modern era. Like, it totally works now with all these great independents. Hey, imagine if he defended the title at this show or that show. And immediately people started going, oh, I want to see so-and-so challenge for it. And it just kept like ticking over like that. And I said, this, here we go. This is it. Like, and
is it fair to say that, like, because when you were doing that and you were going around defending this belt everywhere, that if even though you were defending against opponents, it felt like it was like, when is he going to get the opponent? Like, it felt like it was like that. I remember watching it kind of going, there's going to be one that you go, okay, now that's the match. That's kind of what it felt like.
We knew that was going to come. And we were just sort of holding out because we just kind of went, well, it will present itself. And obviously it did. So, you know, we got Cody's attention, and I remember the first time his name came up was when I was, cause I'd been doing stuff. I have to say this too. I have to give credit where it's due. Around the exact same time that I started doing stuff where they reached out to me to do the NWA stuff, I had started doing stuff with Tommy Dreamer at House of Hardcore too. And I went and filmed these vignettes with James Musselwhite, who did Marty's original villain vignettes, where I basically sat there in a, you know, shirt and tie and kind of just cut a promo on like how, you know, I was typecast as this certain thing and no one really knows me and this, and you know, just trying to do something different to get people to go wow. And Tommy picked up on that and ran those on his Twitch show, and it got a great reaction. So I had good heat at How to Hardcore at that time. Like, I, you know, me and Joey Mercury were like the hottest heels there at that point. And so that sort of coincided, and then obviously me and Tommy did a title match at the ECW arena. And I remember when we did Busted Open, that was the first time Cody's name came up, because Tommy said something about, oh, Cody Rhodes texted me about, you know, good luck in your NWA title match or something like that. And I was kind of like, oh, did he? You know, like, and I just sat back because I knew what was coming. Like, one, and then it's so funny because, you know, I have a vision, you know, like I visualize who I want to be and what I want it all to look like. And I think that I've always believed that if you maintain a vision of who you want to be, like, what does that ideal vision look like? You won't ever necessarily get exactly that, but you will subconsciously attract certain opportunities and certain happenstance to where you will get something close to that. It's like the old adage, you know, if you shoot for the moon, you might reach the stars. You know what I mean? And that was kind of where we were at. But the Cody thing, I was like, okay, well that's gonna be the one, because he was hot. Like, you know, he was very hot. And I said, okay, that's gonna happen some point. But I've got to get hotter first. And there's got to be the opportune sort of show for it. And then, of course, he made the announcement about All In. And, like, it's so funny because right away I went to myself, I wonder if he wants to do the NWA title match at All In. You know what I mean? Like, and I thought, I don't know. Nah, he's probably going to wrestle Kenny Omega, or, you know what I mean? Or
yeah,
or something like that. And I thought, I don't know, you know, but it was enough for me to sort of sit on it. And then by the time I had had enough confidence to speak it out loud to the guys, within a few days, Cody reached out to Lagana. And then, like, there was a little bit of a, you know, a bit of a dance back and forth and kind of, you know, trying to feel out, because he didn't know me and I didn't know him. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why everything worked so well, because a lot of the stuff that you saw in our early interactions was real. Like, there was a bit of a sort of alpha male thing going on, and we were kind of, you know, there really was a lot of that sort of poker game going on, you know, behind the scenes. And I loved all that. I said, this is our show. Like, this is exactly what we talked about. Like, the thing I loved about, you know, like the 24/7 and stuff for like Mayweather fights is they talk about all the negotiations of like if you ever watched, there's one that they did a feature length when they did for Mayweather Pacquiao. It's incredible. And they're talking about all of the, well, first they wanted to have drug testing, and then they changed the money and they wanted to do 60-40, and then they wanted to do 50-50, and, you know, and they go through all this stuff. And it's fascinating because it's like, wow, you know, like they're negotiating with each other to fight, you know.
and we live in that culture where we want that kind of information because it enhances wanting to watch the fight.
Right. And for some reason, like, we've never done that with wrestling, because ever since the Monday Night Wars, we've lived in this world where, like, oh, he's under contract to this company, so, you know, he can only wrestle people in that company, and this, you know what I mean? Like, the whole sort of idea that wrestlers, which is ironic because wrestlers really are independent contractors, that element of it had never really been explored, of like, these guys are negotiating with each other how to do business, you know, like a prize fight. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, yeah, no, if you want to wrestle me for the world title, if you want the opportunity to have this big moment at this big show where you can think, okay, fine, it's going to be worth my while. I want this, I want that. And that was how it worked. Like, and...
Well, because what fascinates me about the whole thing is, so I think it was May 13th of last year where the press conference happened. And it was like, okay, so Billy comes out, he says there's going to be an NWA title match. And it gets announced, it's you and Cody. And I remember when it got announced, and there was kind of a reaction of, is that it? Like, is that going to be the match initially? Of like, you know, like you say, maybe some people initially thought, oh, it's going to be Cody and Omega, or it's going to be whatever. And you two had kind of had these different paths, because you're doing this traveling champion thing, a very serious thing, and he was kind of part of being the elite and doing a lot of kind of goofy stuff. And then it ended up that you guys go on to have whatever they thought was match of the night. But I just wonder, initially, when you guys knew you were doing it, it's announced and all that kind of stuff, what was the strategy going to be? I mean, you've kind of told us part of it already, but what was your strategy, you and Cody, going to be to build it? Because obviously it's not something where you guys are going to be together a lot on screen, so you kind of have to manufacture some stuff.
Right. So, right off the bat, I said, because I couldn't be there. And Billy was going to be there for the press conference or whatever. So I said, right away, a lot of the stuff that we did was always, we would take advantage of whatever the current situation was. And again, that was just because we had to do it that way because of budget, you know, like we had to sort of, a lot of the time we had to just work with whatever we had and then make that part of the story. Dave and I have always had this philosophy where we go, authenticity earns the trust of the audience. Like, where instead of trying to work everything, like, oh yeah, I'm making millions of dollars for this, you know what I mean? And like stuff like that, because people will sort of go like, no, you ain't, you know, and or if you know, if you're really not, then like eventually that sort of shines through and people sort of and I think we're seeing a lot of that now in, you know, in wrestlers from the past, because I think we're starting to go like, oh, you know, like it's you, you know, you were just kind of lying a lot of the time. And we just said, like, let's, you know, authenticity is what gets people to the table. And so we always took whatever the real situation was and made that part of the story. So I forget why, but like probably booking or something, but I couldn't be there. And I said, well, this is great. Cause you know, my genuine reaction as a businessman was like, kind of makes me look like a bit of a jabroni that like Billy's there announcing that it's going to be an NWA title match and Cody's there saying he's going to challenge for it and I'm not there and I'm the champion. I was like, that's kind of backwards, you know? And we were like, great, let's use that. So then we did the whole thing where I was like TMZ style and said like, hey, I didn't agree to anything. I'm the champion. I don't have a contract. Like I can do whatever I want. If Cody wants a title match, you better make it worth my while because I'm not agreeing to anything yet. And then we left it at that for weeks. Until we got to London. And then we, you know, obviously, because it was a Ring of Honor show, essentially, we, you know, it opened the door for a relationship between us and Ring of Honor. And so then, you know, I got a load of bookings from Ring of Honor and they said, okay, you know, you'll be here. And we just basically looked at it down the line and said, okay, between here and September, like where are Cody and I going to cross paths? And obviously the pivotal one was London. We said, we have to, you know, we have to be in London. And that one really, like, that was when I knew we were going to do something big, because the reaction to that was so strong, like not only in the building, but like online and stuff, because it was almost like people couldn't believe, like, he's, because even though they know I'm from England, they know I don't live there. So they thought to themselves, now this guy flew all the way over to England just to walk out in a suit, you know, looking only as I can look, Kenny.
Of course, modest.
And confronting him and like accepting the match. But it was like, because it's, that's the thing. It's the commitment. It's the effort. Like, and people went, wow, like we're a part of something. Like we, it's so funny to me because I think of All In, and All In was initially, the concept was basically like they were going to show the world that their kind of wrestling, like that type of wrestling, could draw a big crowd and fill an arena. And I always find it kind of funny that after all that was said and done, the match that everyone still talks about and everyone was talking about on the night, and you know, a lot of people, a great deal of people thought should have been the main event and stuff, was a heavyweight title match between me and Cody. You know, like nobody would have predicted that. And it was just, you know, that's a testament to our storytelling and to the principles that I've always argued are still there and still work. And it was, you know, that was the great, you know, when Cody and I stood in the ring and Earl rang the bell and the whole place is standing before we even touched, like that was like the ultimate validation for me for like the you know, 3 years since I'd left TNA, where I was like banging my head against the wall going, there is still a place for like storytelling and like building anticipation. And like, you know, it's not all just about a match. It's not just about spots. It's not just about like athleticism. It's about a moment, you know? And it was like this ultimate validation, because Cody has that same philosophy. He just, you know, he was just playing, you know, a better political game by kind of, you know, catering to all the different, you know, audiences. Right. And it was just this ultimate validation where I said, this business is over the top. It's about making the effort. You know what I mean? Like on every level, from the weigh-ins and the entourages and the press conferences and the, you know, like even the thing where the slow motion walk where Cody and I walked across the stage, you know, towards each other and met in the middle with All in the background. That was at a Smashing Pumpkins concert. And really? I will take full credit for that, because I saw this beauty shot. I think it was McGregor and Jose Aldo, where they did something similar, and it was kind of like, it had like a sort of Vegas strip in the background or something. And I was like, man, that's a cool shot. And I was like, why can't we do something like that? And I sent it to Dave and said, how can we do something like this? And then he was like, he was like, well, the next time you're going to be there is in Atlanta and this and that. And I said, wait, Atlanta, like, isn't that when Billy has a concert in Atlanta the next night? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, can't we do it on the stage? Like, can't we just get him, you know? And he was like, shit, you're right. Cause I'd been to one of Billy's concerts, cause they did that. They were doing the tour, they were touring, and they had this incredible set, you know, this like awesome, you know, huge arenas and these stage and all these lights and stuff and the screen. And I was like, do you think we could do it there if we went in the day? And he was just like, Billy immediately was like, fuck yeah, we can do that. He's like, I'll make him do it. Like in, which is, you know, again, we had through serendipity, even though we were working on a shoestring, we had the ability to present this product that looked like a really high budget thing because we had access to it, you know? And, yeah. The whole thing was just a testament to effort, you know.
And one of the big things that people, I don't think they even thought about it coming into the match, but coming out of it, it's one of the big things that I remember, and I think a lot of people do, is the entourages, you know. Yeah. And almost one of the, I'm not saying this because you're on the call, I said it at the time, like one of the best use of legends I've seen in years, where, you know, there's guys who mean something to certain, like Jeff Jarrett being with you. A lot of, you yes. know, you guys fell out, you guys are friends again, that there's an element yep. there. DDP, who was friends with Dusty, he's there with Cody.
Right.
All these different elements, right. It just added so much. So who came up, what well, was the idea was, behind that?
So it was funny because Cody and I would have a lot of these moments where we were always on the same page. Like we would, you know, leading up to it, we would text each other with certain ideas. And almost every time, one of us would text the other and say, hey, what about this? And the other person would text and go, that's so funny because I was going to suggest the same thing. Cody was the one who texted me about the entourages because I had thought about it and then just hadn't really given it any more thought. And I was like, I'm glad you said that because I think that's great. I think it would be totally different and just give it like this big fight feel. But it was Cody who had the extra detail of, you know, my entourage is going to be all people who mean something to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be my father-in-law. It's going to be DDP. It's going to be Glacier. You know, it's going to be my brother-in-law, you know, and Pharaoh, obviously. And I said, okay. And I was like, okay, cool. So I said, so then I started racking my brain going, okay, who are the people that have really, you know, been an integral part of my career, my journey. So obviously, and again, it just talks to the sort of genuine competitiveness we have with each other, because Cody would text Dave all the time. You know, he's like, oh, what kind of shape is Nick in? Is he leaning up for all in? Is he like, you know, what's he doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and because he was the one who wanted to do the weigh in. And I was like, well, he means a pose down, but okay. I was like, if he wants to do a pose down with me, like, all right. You know what I mean? So, you know, we had a genuine competitiveness with each other, but we embraced it. You know, even when we saw each other, we would talk about it and like laugh about it, because it was like, because we know that just like, you know, obviously his father is Dusty Rhodes, and, you know, it's well documented that Dusty had that same sort of thing with Flair and, you know, and other people. So like, he understands that brings out the best people. The same, you know, I'm sure if you talked to, you know, The Rock and Steve Austin, they probably genuinely like wanted to, you know, they probably had a genuine competitiveness with each other and stuff like that. And we, you know, we embraced it. And the funny thing with the, I remember with the entourages thing, I remember being like, oh, he's got a Hall of Famer. I need a Hall of Famer. And I thought about it, and I could have asked Kevin, you know, I could have like, or Scott or someone like that. But I knew in my heart that the real person that deserved that spot was Jeff, because nobody went to bat for, you know, for me more than Jeff did early on. You know, when Eric Bischoff came into TNA, he didn't know who I was. So I sort of got put on the back burner, and then Bruce Pritchard came in and he didn't have a clue who I was. So sort of, I was just like a piece of furniture. And when they got the India deal, Jeff was put in charge of that. And he was just like, this is going to be your platform, buddy. Like this, he said that to me. He's like, this is going to be your chance to show him who you can be. And, you know, he did that for me and he gave that to me. And after he came back, like, I was on an upward trajectory after that. And then obviously when I finished up with TNA, the first person who called was Jeff and said, I've got this startup doing Global Force. And I ended up being the first champion there. And, you know, so it's, and I know he's a polarizing guy, and I just went, you know what? That's going to be fine. That's going to add to it. That's all going to add to the atmosphere, because it's going to be another thing that nobody knew he was going to be there. So then right away, be like, oh shit, Jeff Jarrett's with it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just anything we could do to just make it the biggest moment, you know? And,
so really you helped Jeff get to the Royal Rumble this year. If you want to think.
Well,
about it.
I hate to pat myself on the back, Kenny, but I have the golden touch, because three out of the four members of my entourage have since gone on to sign with WWE. So, two of them in producer roles, and one of them is going to NXT. So it's like, you know, I hate to brag, but obviously they were, you know, I've got the Midas touch. It's that Bobby Heenan thing. It's like, you stick with me, you go to the top.
Well, I do want to ask you, because, you know, talking about all the stuff we've talked about, it kind of comes to this. So the 1-2-3 hits, Cody wins the title. What are you thinking when it's done? Is there a vindication feeling in your head? What are you thinking when it's all said and done? You've just done this match and had this atmosphere and all the stuff that's going on. What were you thinking at the end?
Nailed it. Like, you know, just like, you know, it would have been really hard to not, you know, like, I'll tell you that the moment that was really for me was the beginning. Like I said before, because again, Cody and I, you know, we had a lot of nonverbal communication, and I knew, I had this feeling, just like everything fell into place for that show, for everybody. Like, for example, even So I'm friends with Shannon Moore, and you know Shannon's had, you know, he's had his issues, you know, and he's sort of trying to, and he's sort of found himself again, and he's trying to get back into the business, and he reached out to me and asked if I could help some way. And he's in great shape and everything else, and I said, and I so I contacted Conrad and got him a table at Starcast, and he was over the moon with that. Like, he was just like, oh, thank you so much, you know what I mean, this is just a great, you know, just it's just cool to be around it all and just sort of get back in the fold and kind of do some networking and, you know, maybe sell some merch, whatever. But then Shannon says, hey, I've got a buddy in Chicago who has a luxury car dealership, and he's a huge fan, and he basically wanted to know if you wanted access to like any of his inventory, you know, for the weekend. And I'm like, what are we talking here? And he's like, the guy calls me right away and was like, I've got a G Wagon, I've got a Bentley, I've got this, I got that. I was like, Bentley. In the end, this guy was so cool. His name's Gino. He was so cool that like he ended up bringing me not only the Bentley, but he ended up bringing the Mercedes G Wagon as well. 'Cause then he's like, oh, your buddies can drive that one around. So all that whole weekend, I was rocking up to like Starcast for the way and stuff in a Bentley right out front, you know what I mean? And it was just all of those things just added to it. People were like, oh damn, you know, like, and then the, you know, and then like I deliberately made sure that I came once in the Bentley and then came back later in the G Wagon, just, you know, just little things like that, just to like keep everybody guessing and keep everyone like on their toes. And it was just, you know, everything fell into place, like I say, with that whole, with everything. And so that when by the time we got to the ring and it was happening, it was kind of like we had this, I think I definitely had this feeling. I was like, I could tell from the way that people were talking to me at Starcast, and the way that people reacted to our weigh-in, and the way that people were just, I you know, wrestling fans can be brutal sometimes. Like, the worst thing they can be sometimes is they can be a bit like too familiar, and it's a hard place to get out of. And I had deliberately tried to make myself not as accessible as usual. Like, I did one brief appearance, and then I said, I'm just going to be at the weigh-in, and I'm going to stay out of sight. Like, because we've done so much here, the last thing I want to do is sort of be overexposed, and you know, familiarity can kill an atmosphere like stone dead. So I took, you know, probably could have made, you know, quite a lot more money if I'd done the other way. But I just believed in the moment so much, and in the craft, that I was like, we've got to do it, we've got to commit. And I could just tell just from the little things, like rocking up in a Bentley, and you know, making sure I was always dressed to the nines, and you know, just I had got myself in like the best shape of my life for that, you know. And like when we did the weigh-in and stuff, I could just feel the atmosphere kind of change, where people went like, it was the first time they'd seen us like face to face in that sort of, in that kind of environment where it was sort of hostile and stuff. And you could see people kind of going like, oh damn, you know what I mean, like that's an obstacle to overcome kind of thing. And obviously we had, and like my guys were there, and like Sam held the title up behind me and stuff, you know, so it all just looked really sort of obnoxious, you know what I mean, really
Enemy
sort of over the
territory.
top. Yeah. And it was like, I kind of had this feeling that just from what I was, well, the feedback we were getting, I thought to myself, I felt like we're going to get like that. I hate to use this because I hate for it to sound like I'm trying to compare myself to these guys, but I said, I think we're going to have like a Hogan Rock moment. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we're on the course to have like, they're going to be standing before, you know, at the bell. You know what I mean? And I never said it out loud, because it was just, it's too delicate. You know what I mean? It's, you don't want to, you have to just whisper it to yourself so that it doesn't fade away. And I knew, and it was like, and the other reason why I didn't say anything was because I knew Cody felt the same way. And so we never talked about it, but I know that he felt the same way. And so when we did the in-ring instructions with Earl, you know, and Earl rings a bell and Cody didn't move, and I didn't move. I looked at him and it was like, I had this little smile on my face. If you go back and look, I have this like little grin on my face. Cause I knew like, it's like, you bastard, you know what I mean? Like I knew we were on the same page with this.
Yeah.
And then like within a few seconds, even though I had absolute confidence it was going to happen, it was still overwhelming. Like it just grew and grew. And suddenly it was like, I haven't really relived it for a while. So it actually like just for a minute, just kind of took me back there. But I took a little walk around for a second and it was like, I'm experienced enough now. And I know I'm good enough at this where I could actually kind of go take this in. You know what I mean? Like enjoy this for a second. Like you can go back to work in a moment, like enjoy this, like, mm-hmm. like feel this, because this is a once in a lifetime thing. And I just, and you know, when you share something like that with someone, like you just have a different sort of, you know, a different kind of relationship with them after that. But that was the ultimate validation for me, because I told you so, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, one, I told you I could carry, you know, I could be the guy. And two, I told you that like this approach would work.
I've just got a couple of questions left and then a couple of listener questions, but I do want to kind of get to this one. You did win the title back from Cody at NWA 70th anniversary. I just kind of wonder, was it always the plan for the Cody reign to kind of be quite short, or do you think that the sort of the belt going to Cody and coming back to you, do you think that's helped your NWA reign overall?
I mean, it certainly didn't hurt, you know, and people are very opinionated about that, and everyone has their sort of armchair booking hats on and stuff. And what you have to remember is this: everything is a business transaction, yeah. And Cody has now, you know, thanks in part to the work that he and I did last year, and also thanks to his body of work before that and what he had already been able to do. He's now managed to land himself a big money spot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We looked at this moment as like, this is so much further ahead than we had planned to be at that point in our sort of startup with this, you know, resurrecting this brand. But it was a no-brainer. You know, it was like, this was our, like, no one can deny now that like the brand has credibility, you know? And that was the ultimate, you know, sort of proof of it. But when people say, oh, you know, hot shot or whatever, to answer your question, I still kind of feel weird about divulging too many plans, but the we always hope to get a trilogy, and we're always going to just, okay, let's see how the first one goes and then kind of go from there. And, you know, now obviously people are like, you know, every day it never ends. Like people are like, when are we going to see Cody Aldis 3? You know, when is it, like, when is the third one going to happen? Is it going to, you know, people, everyone wanted it to be at Madison Square Garden, you know, and no, every other, or the Tokyo Dome, and, you know, and this and that. But obviously everyone has their own circumstances going on. And so in a perfect world, like, I felt like it could have, you know, we, you know, if everything had been exactly how we had wanted it, then yeah, we could have dragged that out longer, and we could have done something else at Nashville, or the outcome could have been different and we could have kept it going. But, you know, he's gone on to this new venture. And so, you know, and so that was sort of one thing. And we had to get the most out of it that we could as a business, meaning the NWA, because obviously, you know, I got a nice payday, and everything like that, but we know what he gets out of it, you know, what do we get out of it? Well, we grossed over $100,000 in Nashville for the rematch. So, you know, and it was profitable. So it's like, for anyone who's sitting there going, oh, why would they do that? It's like, you're living in this world where like money isn't an issue, but it is. It's about, we have to make money, right? We're a startup company. That was our first, people kept saying, when are you going to do a pay-per-view? When are you going to do a show? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do that? So then we did it. We wanted to wait until it was going to be a thing where we could actually draw money. And, you know, I thought NWA 70 was a great show. I personally liked it top to bottom. I mean, obviously I'm biased because I helped do the card, But for what, for with who we had, I wanted to introduce the world to a bunch of people. You know, like I said, you know,
it's great seeing Willie Mack there. It was great seeing him on the show.
Willie's the man. Like, Willie's going to be, you know, Willie's a huge, to me, is like just the, one of the most talented guys I've ever seen. And he's a star.
Cornette on commentary.
Cornette killed it, you know, and so like, and then, but other, you know, Sam Shaw, like one of my closest friends, and like now he's finally getting his shot, you know, and you know, would that have happened without NWA 70? Probably, but it certainly didn't hurt, you know, that he finally was exposed on that level. But it was, but for the, you know, but let's, but for the most part, without disparaging any of those talents who all busted their ass, that was a one match card. You know what I mean? Like, it was Cody Aldis 2. It was the rematch. Like, mm-hmm. that was the, you know, that was the draw. And we did six figures. And, you know, we, you know, as a startup company, they're paying me, they're paying Lagana. We're now pay, we're now in a position where we can pay, we have, we're paying someone to, you know, to be an administrator in the office. You know, it was our opportunity to level up in business, you know, because otherwise we're just what? We're just gonna keep like showing up on other people's shows. Like we had it where when the time was right, we had the thing that people wanted to see, we drew money and we did it. So that was the whole point of it. That was my payoff. You know, that was our payoff for doing all that business in the summer was okay. Now, and Ring of Honor were understanding of that. And they said, yeah, go ahead, go make your money kind of thing. And we did. And then like, we did another show. We did that pop-up show. And, we took, you know, with me and James Storm working on top in a title match, and we turned people away. Like we didn't just sell people. We didn't just sell out the building. We turned people away. Like it was another, you know, like, so we haven't done a lot like because we can't, we haven't done a lot because we want to be consistently good. You know, like
you'd be smart about it, right?
There's way too many people, you know, running before they can walk in this business. And, you know, I've seen it happen too many times, and so has Dave and so has Billy and everything else. So it's like, if you stick to quality and you stick to authenticity and you stick to your principles of doing things your own way and maintaining your identity and galvanizing your audience and never insulting them, eventually those other opportunities will present themselves. And, you know, one of them is our relationship with Ring of Honor. So that then leads to some pretty amazing situations, you know, potentially. And then the other, and then, you know, but who knows what else could present itself.
Well, I do want to ask you about that. I want to say, you know, 2019, we're only 1 month in. It feels like 110 things have happened. We're only at the end of January.
Yes.
You guys have announced the Crockett Cup for, well, yeah, with a date. It's going to be in April.
April,
so I guess
27th.
April 27th. So 2019, obviously, so far, we've got the announcement of All Elite Wrestling. We've got ROH doing their thing. WWE are getting more serious and trying to kind of, you know, nail things down and do new things. And the NWA is continuing to grow as well. Where do you see 2019 going for you in the NWA? What are the plans? Is there anything you can tell us about the Crockett Cup? And anything else you want to share about it?
So, the two major things happened, you know, as far as the entire industry. One is WWE signed this monster rights deal, you know, and money. I wrote about this in my last FSM column. I said, you know, money always attracts money. And, you know, what I've always said was that, you know, the thing that was going to really like give the industry a kick up the ass and kind of, you know, usher in like another sort of real big period was someone with serious money coming in and being willing to spend it. And obviously now we have that, you know, like that, there is, that is happening. You know, as to what, you know, how that's going to look, none of us know. You know, I'm glad that my friends and peers in the industry who took a chance on themselves are now going to make some serious cash. I want to make some serious cash now. And like, that's pretty much where we're at. Like there are different things that present themselves, you know, different potential opportunities. Like, what if we did this? What if we did that? You know, we have a couple of sort of major things that we're sort of dealing with, and I know that I'm sort of being contradictive now because I'm doing what I hate, which is like telling people, oh, we've got big things coming, but I'm not saying they're coming, but they're just there are a couple of things that are potentially very, very serious kind of level ups for us. And who, you know, those things are happening because everybody, not just, you know, not just wrestling people, but other people are starting to go, wait, what? Like, how much money? Oh, you know, well, this thing's, they sell how much merchandise? Oh, let me take a proper look at this. Hey, don't you know someone who does that? You know what I mean? And that's how it happens. And we have, because of 10 pounds, we have like this sort of very tangible kind of body of work that a brand, as a brand, we can point to and be like, when you work with us, you get this, you know, because Dave is brilliant. And, you know, I have proven myself as a talent, but also as a producer, because obviously we collaborate on all of this stuff. Like we're all in the process. And you're seeing it now with Ring of Honor. Like you're going to start seeing more and more high quality artistic content, you know, for Ring of Honor, which is, you know, which has our fingerprints on it. And us, and when I say us, I mean like Lightning One, you know, because that's who I work for, Lightning One Productions. And it's those little things are, you know, are going to keep our sort of value. Yeah. Like you have to sort of prove your value. I've proven my value now by, you know, with not only as someone that people can trust as a talent, but also who can deliver, because I did business and I, you know, for a guy, pretty amazing for Cody, a guy who had a very good run in WWE and has such a storied legacy, for the biggest moment of his career to not happen in WWE, and I'm the guy who helped make that happen, pretty impressive thing to have on your resume, in my opinion. I don't believe that I don't think I'm being like overconfident or over embellishing my stock by saying that. Like it's just a fact. Like it's we've proven that we can sort of, if you give it to me, I will make it happen. And we stand by that. I stand by that as a talent, and as, you know, and we stand by it as a brand. Crockett Cup's going to be great. You know, we like to bring back people enjoy our retro cool element. You know what I mean? Like they like that we're bringing back all these things that they missed and doing it in a modern way. I mean, that's why WWE brought back Starrcade, you know, because there is this whole group of fans. I mean, dude, every time I go to the Carolinas, especially, you know, grown men will shake my hand. Like some of them have tears in their eyes telling me like, thank you for, like, you have no idea how much it means to me that this is a thing again. And like, this is like my childhood. Like, and it's so, you know, I've had people shaking, you know, that they got that, and I go, hey, would you like to hold the NWA title? And they're like, oh, really? You know, and they're shaking, like this, you know, it means so much to them, because
that's cool.
For so many of them, it was part of their childhood, it was part of their life, and it was, you know, for America, for you know, a great deal of Americans, it was a part that wasn't there anymore. And there's an appetite, they're out there, and someone smart is going to see that and going to want to sort of, you know, plug into that energy source, because we are good energy, man. And we, like, we've proven we can do it right, and that we've leveled up sustainably. Like we've done it the right way up to this point, and we'll continue to do that. We're not gonna overpromise. We always overdeliver. Like that's always been our sort of MO. And you're gonna, you know, I wish I could say definitively yes, you're going to see this, you're going to see that, but I don't operate like that. It's like I said, it's like with All In and stuff. I had a vision of who I wanted to be, you know, like I had a vision of walking into Madison Square Garden with the NWA title, because the last person to do that was Harley Race. You know, well, what I mean? Like,
can I just,
but I can't
here.
Say,
I was literally going to ask two listener questions, and one of them, it ties into what you're talking about right now, so I want to bring it in. Oliver Go Drake on Twitter did say, could we see an NWA World Championship match at the ROH show in Madison Square Garden in April? Is that a possibility, do you think?
You have to ask ROH.
There you go, Oliver. I asked
it's
the question.
It,
I asked the
you know,
question.
Like, hey, if you if ask them, you know, make if you want to see it, like, then you have to make your voice heard. Do I see myself walking into Madison Square Garden with the NWA title? I have ever since I won it. But you know, I it's not my decision to make. I think it would be a smart decision. And I don't, you know, I think everyone at this point would agree with me. But yeah, it's you know, that's how we operate. We look at things and go, if we know what we want, you know what I mean? There are certain things that we really want. And if we keep working towards those goals, those things, you know, seem to fall into place because we're all good at this.
So that was, I'm just doing two questions because we went on a little bit longer than we were going to. We did the Twitter question. I want to ask you a Facebook one. Bit of a lighthearted question to finish off. It's nothing about where are you going this year and what are you doing and having to give things away. Instead, it is one of our listeners, Ian Milne, who said, do you have any time to talk about when you went on the Inside the Ropes tour with Scott Steiner? Surely you have some funny stories. I should tell this quickly to preface it.
Yeah, go on.
So we booked Scott Steiner and we're like, okay, this is going to be great because like he's not going to give a fuck and that's fine. And then we book him and then it was like, oh, wait a minute, he might really not give a fuck. Like, what is he going to do here? And you and I were friendly and we'd kind of, and then you and him had history and all that kind of stuff. And we were like, well, he might not actually be able to do 90 minutes. Like, he might just be like, you know, do 20 minutes and go off. It was like, we need to have almost someone who can stop him from beating us up, essentially. And I called you and you so graciously accepted to help me out. But what was it like? Any fun memories of it?
Oh, that was so much. I've had so much fun doing that. I still to this day talk about it and go like, it was one of the funnest like gigs I ever, one of the best bookings I ever got. Like, cause it just didn't feel like work, you know, all like you and all your crew are so like some of my favorite people in the business. Like when I came right after All In, like you lot were the first people I hung out with in the wrestling business after All In, because I came over and did that, the media con, you know, and you were there and it was like, I would never have gone down to the hotel bar, you know, and hung out with like a bunch of wrestlers and wrestling fans had you guys not been there. Like, cause I just, but I, you know, like I, and so it was a blast. And I've always had a really good relationship with Scott. Like, and he was like, I mentioned this on the tour, but you know, when I first went to TNA, I remember like me and Marty texting and stuff and Marty being like, oh God, like, aren't you going to be worried about like Kevin Nash and Scott Steiner and people like that? And I was like, yeah, like, but what am I going to do? You know, I guess we'll just see what happens. And they couldn't have been nicer to me. Like, all they were the ones out of everyone. You know, it was like cheerleader Melissa was a bitch to me. Do you know what I mean? Like people like it wasn't like the big stars. Like, it was, you know, it was like the ones who you were kind of like, oh really? Like, oh, you're a bitch. All right. Well, and you know, like Kevin Nash was, you know, right away was super cool to me. Sting was right away was super cool to me. And I hate to say this, but it's probably because they probably saw something in me. You know what I mean? And Scott, like, he busted his ass. Like, people don't give him credit for how hard he worked, like, with all those younger guys in TNA during that whole time. And Kevin, too. Me and Kevin were on the phone last week, you know, and we were talking about that, how, like, you know, Kevin, like, he knows he's limited, like, especially at this point, you know, with his injuries and stuff. And obviously, he's a giant, but he worked as hard as he could, like, to get all these guys over, like, in TNA. Like, he loved it there. And Scott was like, I mean, I've always, ever since India, that was where we really bonded. And, you know, he's one of those guys. He's like, he sort of gave me his endorsement and I got to, you know, got to sort of feed off his energy. And oh man, we had such a blast. Like, I remember like every night we would just sort of, you and I would talk about like, all right, If he starts going too far down this road, like,
which he did,
what do we do? What do we do? Yeah, what do we do to like pull him back? Like, those are the things I remember, with like having these little like keywords and like trigger words and stuff to like get him off a certain point if he was just gonna like go to town on it.
I mean, when you're doing a show and you get to queue up Hulk Hogan on a court stand saying Hulk Hogan does not have a 10-inch penis, and that's the beginning.
Oh
God.
boy.
Well, from that, I mean, I guess let's just do the plugs. YouTube.com/NWA, where people can watch £10 of Gold, the series. And the cool thing is you can go back and watch like the All In episodes and stuff. It's something that you can kind of go back and binge watch if you've not seen it before.
Yeah, you could binge watch all of them, and or you know, or you could pretty much pick it up from wherever, because it, you know, that's the one of the cool things about it, is they stand alone, but they also work, you know, chronologically. So I would say if you were gonna try to watch one to whet your appetite, yeah, I would watch the All In episode, or I would watch the one right before All In, which is the longer one, which was the final build to me and Cody, where, you know, he gets emotional talking about Dusty and Brandy and all that stuff. It's you know, like I don't think anyone, you know, with a soul could watch that and not, you know, by the end of it go, all right, take my money, I want to see this.
Exactly. And then also you're on Twitter at Real Nick Aldis, also NWA on Twitter. And I guess just people can keep an eye on that for announcements for the Crockett Cup and all the other stuff that you're going to be doing.
The Crockett Cup's coming April 27th. Yeah, at Real Nick Aldis on Twitter and Facebook, and then at Nick Aldis on Instagram. And you know, that you're going to see me, what, for sure. You're going to pretty much see me at most Ring of Honor events in the foreseeable future. For now, I can say that I know a lot of people are often asking me about me doing commentary, because it's sort of taken on a bit of a life of its own. Like, it's I did some commentary in Vegas for Ring of Honor, and Meltzer, I guess, got excited about it, and then ever since then, the kind of people are always wanting. I did commentary for Jay Lethal and Dalton Castle's title match a couple weeks ago and stuff. But yeah, I can confirm that I'm going to be doing more color commentary for Ring of Honor when I'm not appearing, you know, in a wrestling capacity. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that. I love doing that. I like having different, you know, all these strings to my bows. So
Yeah, for sure. Well, Nick, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And if you enjoy it, let us know on Twitter. Thanks for listening, everybody.
thanks, bud.